Like to remind folks to please wait for and use the microphone and identify yourself, name and affiliation when you ask your questions. We'll begin with Shelby Spires.
Yes, I'm Shelby Spires with the Huntsville Times here in Huntsville. I just wanted to know, I mean, just to recap, just so we know, you see nothing that prevents NASA from a return to flight by the May-June time frame. Now, is that what you're saying?
Let's see. Based upon their current plans and our activities, which is what we're mostly interested in at this point, being able to accomplish our activities to support the report to the administrator, we don't see anything that says we can't get our tasks of assessing done. And at this point, we don't see anything that is such a poke out for the program that they can't overcome it in that time frame.
Other question I had was, there's been some concern in the engineering community about your charter and the scope of your charter. One person in particular had questioned me about the possibility of an escape pod on the shuttle and why that wasn't dealt with. Are you satisfied with your charter, or do you think it should have been broadened? You did take on one of the raising the bar issues that NASA brought up.
Well, let's see. We were very careful when we worked with the administrator to understand what our tasking was for him, because we did not want to become have so broad a scope that we would not be able to accomplish our task on a part-time basis. We are a part-time committee, and it's an advisory committee, and so we worked very very carefully to make sure that we could limit our charter and understand it. So no, the answer is I feel our charter is appropriate for the tasks that we have. We're not looking to expand it, nor do we think that this group needs to have an expanded charter. We did take on SSP-3, but that was within the scope of our charter as it related to a specific action that the program was making and that we made a decision to assess relative to STS-114.
Mark?
I'm Mark Caro from the Houston Chronicle. From the meeting this morning, it seemed like an awful lot of the discussion centered around the analysis of the debris from the external tank that's still ongoing, and also the capability to inspect and repair. Do you think that those are going to be the toughest ones to close out at this point, or do you have a sense from the committee that you're ready to accept, especially on the repair, the best effort NASA can make, even if they can't provide a quote certified repair or some sort of contingency repair effort that's maybe not as good as everyone expected at the beginning?
I'm going to let Jim and Joe talk respond to your question. Well, Joe, you want to start, or Jim?
Yeah, I'll start. I'll start by saying that the what we have seen so far in the tile inspection is pretty good. Set that aside, I think that will definitely meet the intent of the CAPE's recommendation. The area about tile repair and RCC repair, right now they're still in work on it, but it's our best feeling at this point in time that they will probably have some limited capability, both in RCC repair and tile repair. Like I mentioned before, come January the 7th, we're going to know more about that, how the testing is going on right now in the thermal vac area, and it may be encouraging, and then they'll expand from that. NASA's plans are to, it's sort of like a development phase right now to get this into a mode of understanding exactly the characteristics of the material, how the material works together, how does it form, what does it do in the environment, and then they'll go to the operations of it as far as the training of the crew, how to put it on, which they have been, by the way. So generally, I'll come back and say there will probably be some limited capability. Definitely, if the hole like the Columbia had, is probably not a hole we'll be able to fix. But right now there has been some very encouraging results from what they're doing. And I'll let you pick it up from there.
I think it's important to make a few distinctions, Mark, on that subject. One, I concur with Joe. I believe when we go back to flying, we're going to have a capability to repair both Tile and RCC. Now, the capability may or may not be certified. It may not be able to fix holes like Columbia suffered. It may require further testing on orbit. There may be some other limitations on those capabilities, but nevertheless, I feel quite confident that we will fly with a repair capability of some description. Two other questions result from that. One is, does that meet the antenna CABE? That's one. And two, does it or should it restrict our ability to go fly? And I think those are two separate questions, and we'll deal with those separately. We'll have much deliberation and discussion about whether or not it meets the antenna CABE, and we'll come up with a conclusion. We'll come to a conclusion on that. But having said that, I don't see at this time any reason that would cause us to restrict or otherwise say that NASA should not fly because of that. Because, and here's the key to this, the other subject you brought up was the external tank. All of the work that's gone into the external tank to significantly reduce liberation of critical debris, and all of the work that's gone into inspection and imaging capabilities to detect and otherwise characterize debris that might be liberated or impact the vehicle, together with the work that's gone into the repair capability, forms what I refer to as a risk mitigation matrix. And on the whole, I think that with all of NASA's work, there has been significant progress in improving the risk condition of the shuttle in these specific areas. And so I'm very comfortable with that total overall reduction in risk. And I would not be able to say that there's anything that I can tell that should stop them from going ahead and flying and completing their work.
Did you have a follow-up to that?
Yes. Mark Kareff, Easton Chronicle again, and this is for Richard Covey as well. It certainly appears you're going to have a different administrator than the one you negotiated your agreement with when you deliver the report. Are his agreements with you binding for the successor, or if a successor reopened this, what would you do?
Well, let's see. We do serve basically at the pleasure of the administrator. The charter that we operate under was established as a 2-year charter. It's very defined as FACA charters are supposed to be, and so that's what we'll operate under. Will the new administrator choose to change that? Well, my take on it is probably not. That I think our role is pretty well defined. There are other ways that and other sources of assessments or independent review that the administrator can call on for other facets of NASA's operations. So I suspect that he'll utilize those resources. He or she will let us go finish our work as chartered. Because it's going to be done relatively quickly if you think in terms of our own milestone of having to have a report to the new administrator a month before launch. So I don't anticipate a change.
Okay, I think what we'll do now is we'll go on to headquarters for questions.
Hi, this is Gwyneth Shaw from the Orlando Sentinel. My question was really about, I believe what Mr. Crippen said, but I could be wrong, about holding on to the recommendation about schedule pressure and resources until quite late in the process. Can you talk a little bit more about sort of how you plan to evaluate that, given what the program's been telling you so far?
The question was, to elaborate a little bit more about what we're doing on schedule and resources. as I said, this is one in which there will be an ongoing interest by anyone inside and outside of NASA. I expect the ASAP board, for example, will be looking at this for their life as well. It's one in which you can only take a snapshot at a point in time, and we're going to take the snapshot relatively close to the end of our project here. The CABE was worried about what they saw at the time of Columbia, schedule pressure, which they asserted was due to lack of resources or constrained resources. The schedule pressure came largely as a function of wanting to complete the International Space Station in a given time frame. And that, in part, was promoted by resources or the fact that the station had cost more, several times more than was anticipated at the beginning. So they're all linked, but the schedule pressure really wasn't from the shuttle itself. It was rather from the assembly dates for the space station. Nonetheless, they went on to make this recommendation about matching the schedule to resources available, and so that there isn't undue schedule pressure. As we've said in this and other forums, there's always a role for scheduling and therefore some time constraint to apply, and everyone at NASA understands that. Indeed, one of the things we have done in the past is talk to some of the workers who are actually accomplishing these tasks, particularly at the Cape, and they fully understand that a schedule is necessary to bring a very complex development vehicle like this back to all together one time in order to be able to launch it. So the question is, what is undue schedule pressure, and when does it become detrimental? I can't tell you we have the exact answer to that, but we certainly haven't found anything thus far everywhere we've looked that would suggest there is undue schedule pressure. I suggest that we're going to continue to look because there are continuing developments both in terms of the budget and the return to flight activities. I should have probably noted earlier, if any of you haven't, that NASA's budget, which was finalized just a few weeks ago, is one of the few in the entire federal government that was funded at the level of the President's request. So we certainly don't anticipate at this point that resources are going to be an issue on return to flight. NASA has continually told us that they will make enough resources, whatever resources are necessary, available, and we have seen nothing to the contrary at this point.
Just to follow that up a little bit, this is Gwyneth Shaw from the Sentinel again. Have you talked to folks in the program about the reports in the last month or so that some people in the program are a little bit concerned about the effort to try to finally get a lid on some of these return-to-flight costs and maybe opt out of some things based on the price tag?
Yeah, the question is, are some things going to go unfinished, I guess, in my words, because of need to move on or because of budget constraints? I think the answer is going to be yes. We haven't identified any specific tests that have been proposed that have been discontinued or dropped because of budgetary resources. At some point, of course, as all of you in the engineering community know better than I, there are continuing questions you could ask. This could go on for a very long time. The question is, you know, the return to it and what we need to do before we fly again. And so at some point, whether it's budgetary questions or not, there will be some tests that won't be concluded before the beginning or before return to flight, and there will be some avenues probably not pursued or given up. But again, one shouldn't imbue to that negative consequences. It is a natural course of events that things do have to wrap up and that there will always be more tests. My engineering friends tell me they can devise tests until the cows come home. But at some point, the shuttle has to go. So I wouldn't look for bad motives or necessarily negative outcomes to the fact that some tests may not be concluded before the next flight, or that indeed budget at some time will become a constraint.
I think that what I heard was, is the sensor package part of the OBSS? Is that correct?
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Answer that.
All right. Is that,
that's a good question.
I think the question was, is what's the status of the sensor package that goes aboard the OBSS, and is that a part of the closure of the package? I think the current feeling, the current position right now is that the OBSS will fly with at least one sensor suite when we fly, and more if we can get to it. Probably the number that we fly with will be one or two different kinds of sensors. And the answer, if I understood your question right, the answer is yes. The sensor package is part of our consideration of the OBSS.
On the safe haven recommendation, you said that you think we'd have that closed by the end of the year. How might that be possible with the shortages on the station now, not having enough food, water in there? How can you close that down without having resources on the station?
Is that...
How can you close out CSCS given the lack of resources on the station?
Well, the Space Flight Leadership Council and Bill Reedy by name has stated and gone on record that we won't launch until the gap between contingency shuttle crew support and our ability to launch STS-300 is closed. So if station can't support CSCS, we won't launch.
Okay, let's see. I believe that was the last question from headquarters, so let's go to the Kennedy Space Center now for questions.
Yes, hi. This is Marcia Dunn of the Associated Press. Question for anyone at large. There was some talk by one of the members at the close-up, roundup portion at the end about how there may end up being some gray areas where members are just going to have to scratch their heads. And I'm wondering if that's just the reality of this, that there are going to be some recommendations which are going to be sort of muddy to close, most notably the inspection and repair technique. Could someone comment on that?
Let's see, Jim, I think you were Mr. Gray Area. So,
Well, if I answer the wrong question, come back at me. Let me try it. As I read the Columbia Accident Investigation words relative to 641, the CABE asked for NASA to deploy a practicable means of repair over the widest possible range of damage states and take advantage of the International Space Station on missions where we could to do that, and ultimately to deploy an autonomous method of repairing shuttle which did not rely on the International Space Station. Now, that's a paraphrased way to say it. That has turned, to come up with a practicable means of repair over the widest possible range of damage states has turned out to be a very tough task for NASA. We're up against technological barriers at almost every corner, and you can imagine what it's like to implement these repairs from an operational perspective when you're wearing a spacesuit. It's kind of like putting your contacts in with snow mittens on. It's not conducive. The spacesuit's not conducive to very fine kinds of work, so you have to you're not only limited by technology, but how you have to apply it. So I'm not making excuses. I'm just saying the facts are that it's a tough problem to solve. NASA has achieved minimal to limited success in coming up with things that we can do to fix the reinforced carbon-carbon leading edges of the wings and the tiles. So we're going to be left with the task of figuring out whether what they've done meets the intent of CABE for the purposes of return to flight or not. And as I tried to say earlier, we think we're probably going to land in a gray area on that one. We think that there's going to be a lot of debate and deliberation that goes on within our task group as a whole on that very issue. It would be premature of me to say, and I can't guess, what this group will conclude is the strict interpretation of our work or of NASA's work when compared to the CABE recommendation. I just simply can't guess at that. But I will say this, that regardless of which way we come down on that issue, we feel at this point that NASA will have some capability to repair both tile and RCC. And we see no reason why the capability that we have is not good enough to go fly with so that they can complete their testing and complete the development of the repair capabilities that they do have and continue to grow them into the future. That's a long-winded answer, but I hope it's the question that you asked.
I think it's worth just another 30 seconds, Jim, to reiterate what you said earlier on. That is, each of these recommendations, well, you can look at them one at a time and say yes or no. We have struggled and I think have come to a pretty good consensus in the task group that we have to look at the whole and not just the individual pieces, and that in this case the sum of the parts is greater than or less than something. But in this case, the CABE clearly understood some of the limitations with the words they used, but also just their basic logic. They said eliminate debris, have a plan to eliminate debris or program to eliminate debris, but their intent or the objective was to eliminate all debris. Well, if they thought that was possible, they wouldn't have gone on to say, oh, by the way, you ought to be able to inspect for damage, you ought to be able to repair damage, because if you eliminated all debris, you wouldn't need that. So they clearly understood in their own logic and their own discourse that their recommendations were subject to imperfection. And so, as Jim said earlier, we have to look at all of these recommendations in toto and to ask the ultimate question of, has NASA addressed what CABE found to be the deficiencies, and have they met those deficiencies? And it's in that context that we'll be evaluating these things at the end.
Yes, that certainly helps. So thank you for answering that. And then my follow-up question to Mr. Covey will be, when you meet to come to a consensus, does everyone have to agree? This is going to be a very difficult thing to debate these gray areas, and do you need 100% agreement? What happens if you get a hung jury? Is it majority rules? How do you anticipate going into something where you could have quite a bit of disagreement among the members?
We'll see, Marcia. It'll be a learning experience for us. But I can tell you that I have no thought that we will always get 100% agreement on our assessments. And so, thus, we will move to and rule by a consensus. But we will give alternatives for people who may have a differing opinion, if they choose to have a way to express that opinion. We've got 26 people, and good grief, that's a lot of people, a lot of different approaches, backgrounds, and opinions to try to bring together. And we've been successful so far, and I hope we can be successful in doing that to the end. We have debate, particularly in our fact finding. We have a lot of debate as to interpretation of the CABE recommendation and the applicability of the actions taken, and it's always healthy. And I suspect that will continue right up to the end on all of those that continue to be open. And that's the way we've operated, and that's the way we will continue. I don't see it being a barrier to us completing our work.
Todd Halverson, Florida Today, for Colonel Adamson. I'm just wondering, in your mind, is the development of a practicable TPS repair capability a requirement for return to flight? And I have a follow.
Yes, Todd, I think it is. The way I interpret the CABE, I think a practicable repair technique is a requirement. However, I want to add that I don't believe it needs to be certified. It's an emergency technique for an emergency situation. I don't think it necessarily has to have completed all its testing. It has to be reasonable, doable, and practicable. And I think NASA is going to have that.
Okay, and just to following that, I understand your rationale on a risk reduction matrix, but the CABE made separate and distinct recommendations requiring, the fixes to the ET, providing three useful views, as well as the recommendations made in 6.4.1. And it sounds to me like you guys are willing to give them a pass if they do not come up with a viable TPS repair capability, and I'm just wondering whether you'll disagree with my with what I'm seeing here.
Well, let me put it this way. I think there's a possible scenario where we might disagree that they have met the intent, the full intent or goal of the CABE recommendation, and still be okay with them deciding that it's okay to fly because of this overarching reduction of risk that was described by myself and Dan earlier. But that's because, you know, it's really not our call to say that the shuttle's safe to fly. We're looking at a very tiny subset of all of the things that NASA has to consider to get them to fly again, so we really can't be in a position of declaring the shuttle safe to fly. That's their call. We just have to kind of render ourselves in the position of calling balls and strikes, and that's what we want to do, is stick to our knitting. But I do think that that it's possible, but I think that they're going to have a limited capability. Joe, why don't you?
I think we're going to need to give the NASA folks some more time before we jump to any conclusion at this point. There is a lot of progress being made. There's a lot of work activity. I have seen some good results recently. I think there's more time before we jump to say, hey, verily, they, you know, what they can fly with and what they cannot fly with, or did they meet the intent or did not meet the intent on tile repair and tile inspection period, just that area only. Let's sit back here for a while and let's not jump into anything that we have said here today that would say that we are in any agreement with NASA at this point in time, except we feel that they're going to have some limited capability, and what that's going to be, we need to wait a little bit longer. And I think by March we're going to have a real good feeling about that. And I agree with Jim's statement that we need some capability, and what that capability is, we don't know at this point in time, and hopefully by March we'll know.
I understand there's another question from KSC.
Yes, John Kelly from Florida Today. I just wanted to clear up something that I heard in the meeting and that I think that Colonel Adamson spoke a little bit about again here in the news conference. I just want to make sure I understand on the OBSS and the number of sensors. There was a statement during the meeting, I think, that NASA or the program officials had decided to try to get to the two sensors for STS-114 and accept the two-week schedule slip. Do you mean... I just wanted to clarify whether that's a slip that you're saying they've accepted beyond the current window, or exactly. If somebody could clear that up, because then you said in the press conference here that you weren't sure whether it would be one or two.
No. What I meant to say was, I first of all, I'm not commenting on the schedule or the slip or where they are with respect to that right now. We'd have to ask Bill Reedy about that. I know that they want to have two. I think they will accept one if they have to, because they're not certain that they'll get to two. I think the fact that they're willing to slip a couple weeks in order to get there tells you how bad they want to. But I think that they would fly with one. Joe, do you have further information?
No, I agree with you. They'll fly with one, but they're really on track to put two on. And they have made, again, a significant progress there to have both sensors there to support the operation. We had a telecon yesterday with the inspection team, and they said that they were very encouraged to have two of them there. About a schedule slip, I don't know anything about a schedule slip. Maybe a schedule slip internal to having the boom and sensor ready, but not to change their milestone of when they're going to launch the vehicle.
Okay, I believe that was all of the questions from Kennedy. We have probably time for one or two more here, and then we'll have to wrap it up. Mark?
Mark Caro from the Houston Chronicle. When NASA recently issued its most recent version of the shuttle return-to-flight implementation plan,
Bill Parsons said they would sort of like to wrap this process up with you around late March. Do you have some sense that you will meet in that sort of time, not on their call, but just on your own call and try to wrap this up, or are you willing to go longer than that? Do you think you'll need to go longer than that? I'm just trying to get some sense of when your committee wants to kind of finalize what it's doing.
Mark, because of the process we follow, of course, the fact-finding will continue within the panels. We are targeting our next plenary, face-to-face plenary, and our final plenary in the March time frame. And at that point, we will complete our assessments based upon the data that we have. Hopefully, all of the closure packages will be updated to what we believe is acceptable within the panels, and they're willing to bring those forward for recommendation for acceptance. But if they're not, then we will still go ahead based upon the data we have and complete our assessment of whether the intent of the CABE recommendations are made. So by definition, we're gonna finish that work in that time period so that we can put that in the form of a final report that can be delivered to the administrator by the middle of April, which is our target. If we wait any longer than that, then we will not have time to put together our report. So if our assessments are by definition, our assessments will be complete in March. I think it's probably the right way to put that.
Shelby Spires, Huntsville Times. This question is for Dr. Crippen. You mentioned today in the meeting about the modeling, you had some concerns about the computer modeling. I was wondering if you had concerns overall about computer modeling and return to flight, or were those related to the tank, the external tank? Because I know a lot of the debris shedding modeling is ongoing, and that's where most of the assessment comes from.
Now, my comments, while in the context of the analysis being done with the tank and debris, were more general than that. I just, having been an observer of modeling in the past and an evaluator of economic models at least, I'm concerned that we don't push the modeling to results that we can't really rely on. We should not give ourselves a false sense of security. As with any analytic models, the output is only as good as the assumptions. And so we need to just be cautious about how much we rely on models to tell us something when they're not capable of doing it. So that there was just a more general caution than any specific model, per se.
And I'm going to take the last question from Mark.
Mark Haruff from the Houston Chronicle. I guess I'm still not clear, Mr. Covey, if you have a sense of whether this can all be brought together in a time frame that would permit a May-June launch. I mean, you have the big picture in a way the rest of us don't. Probably not even NASA can see it from your perspective. Is it doable, do you think, or do you think it'd be wise to take some more time and look beyond May, June to one of the other windows this year?
Well, we talked about that some amongst ourselves, and right now we don't see anything that stands in front of the agency that can't be accomplished in order to make the May-June launch window.
Dick, you might also add to that, Mark, just for your information, that is the very question the administrator is asking all of us right now. He wants to know that too, and he wants to know it now, because if there are anything sticking out, in fact, he came to visit us at the beginning of our meeting this time. That's what he asked us. You know, do you guys see anything? You know, that's why he wanted us to get all the stuff up on the table. And it's a good question. And we gave him the same answer.
Or will.
Okay. I think that will have to conclude our briefing this afternoon. Just one